You are Locked On MLB, your daily podcast on Major League Baseball, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hey everyone, welcome to another edition of Locked On MLB, your daily podcast covering Major League Baseball. I am Tommy Stokey, and it was a pretty good opening week for some. It was not so good for others. The good news is it's only three or four games, so if you're writing your team's obituary, I urge you to slow down. And if you think that you're ready to win the World Series, well, you're probably a Cubs fan who only watched the first couple innings against the Miami Marlins. So, long way to go, 157, 158 games. But, you know, like we talked before, some things we learned, some things probably a little too early. So, it's a Monday edition of Locked On MLB. I want to start a new segment here on Mondays, going over a bit of a power ranking, a top 10, but I don't want to do a traditional here are the top 10 teams in baseball because I don't imagine that it would change all that much. And, you know, you could have situations like this where the Dodgers are 2-2, so all of a sudden are they not in the top 10 because the Pittsburgh Pirates are 3-0? Well, not really. So I want to go off of the 10 teams that had the best week. So in this case, only 4 days, but let's go through those. Let's see who's doing well, who, for different reasons, had the best week in baseball. From there, I want to give my opinion on Gabe Kapler and what his weekend was like. It was a bad weekend for the Phillies, losing 2 out of 3 to the Braves. Really could have got swept, but the amount of pitching that they used, the way that the bullpen was handled, whether it was the Aaron Nola incident, whether it was bringing in a pitcher who hadn't warmed up yet. I'm going to come to defense of Gabe Kapler, and that's kind of hard to do. But, you know, I don't think he's crazy. I don't think that everything that he's done is necessarily all his fault. And I think he's getting a hard time because of, you know, his reputation, and he seems to be an easy target to pick at. And then from there, we'll end the show with a couple thoughts on Shohei Ohtani, his debut on Sunday against the Oakland Athletics. A lot of you guys probably saw that. MLB Network aired it. If not, you probably saw all of the highlights on Twitter. So let's talk about what I saw there. Some interesting debut, and probably better than a lot of people expected after his spring training. But let's start with these power rankings. Number 10, again, this is just best week in baseball last week. Number 10, I want to go with the San Francisco Giants. 2-2, their big three, or not their big three, I should say their big two acquisitions, plus Austin Jackson, another third, but Evan Longoria, Andrew McCutchen, got pretty much nothing from those two. Score 2 runs in 4 games against the Dodgers, so how can I say that they had the 10th best week in baseball? Well, if you do that and still come out with a split on the road in LA against the Dodgers and you're the Giants, I think that's pretty good. And offense isn't really what you were worried about. We're really worried about their pitching. Without Madison Bumgarner, without Jeff Samardzija, what would they be able to do? Johnny Cueto looked like an ace, like he has in the past. Stratton was good today. It was good on Sunday. Ty Block was good on opening day. So overall, I would call it an encouraging week, despite the offensive woes for the Giants. Number 9, the New York Mets. I think number 1, that they came out healthy, but 2, winning 2 out of 3 against the St. Louis Cardinals. Noah Syndergaard, Jacob deGrom both look good. They also got good news that Michael Conforto could be coming back soon. Take a look at Joe Nocco on LockedOnMLB.com with opinions on the Mets. He looked at 2 different things this weekend. A, 5 things that the Mets need to do to be successful, keys to their success. And B, he looked at the outfield depth and how Mets fans kind of think it's a bad thing. Well, here's a reminder, outfield depth is a good thing. Number 8, Minnesota Twins. Check out Locked On Twins. Brandon Warren does a really good job over there. But the Twins to take 2 out of 3 against Baltimore is good. But more importantly, the performance of Jose Berrios, Kyle Gibson, Jake Odorizzi, didn't give up a run from your 3 starters. So I don't think you can do much better than that. Although they could probably be higher if it weren't for this controversy, I guess, that they're raising about Chancisco bunting against the shift when it's 7-0 or 6-0 and Berríos as a one hitter. I guess one hitter really isn't a thing. There's no real difference between one hitter and two hitter. And if you're going to shift, then players are going to try to beat it. So if you don't want him to bunt, then play a normal defense. I mean, there's like four people in the world that find fault in what Chan Cisco did. And it's like Brian Dozier, Berríos, and everybody else in the Minnesota Twins clubhouse. So I guess that's 25. But really just dumb, again, getting into this unwritten rules. And I know we're not baseball players. I'm not a baseball player. I don't understand. But also, what a dumb thing to say. Number seven, the Seattle Mariners, Felix Hernandez. Overall, good start. Just shy of six innings in his debut, but he came out strong and wins a duel with Corey Kluber, thanks to Nelson Cruz, but really two out of three against the Indians. James Paxton, not very good, but if you were to say, hey, look, James Paxton is going to get rocked and you're still going to win two out of three against the Indians, they would certainly take it. Number six, the Arizona Diamondbacks. Coming at home against the Colorado Rockies, two out of three. Good start there. It's important to get off to a good start, especially when their one loss was when Zach Greinke pitched really well. So they survived Robbie Ray giving up seven runs. Patrick Corbin getting the opening day start. They win there. So just getting off to a good start for Arizona. Surviving when Robbie Ray didn't pitch well. Getting a good effort from Zach Greinke. All good signs there. Brad Boxberger picked up the save in his debut as the closer, so overall impressive stuff from the Diamondbacks, especially because they're shorthanded without Steven Souza. Number five, the Houston Astros, three out of four against Texas. Offense clicking, Garrett Cole looked really good, Justin Verlander looked good, so, I mean, really I think the big takeaway there was probably Garrett Cole, 11 strikeouts. Lance McCullers looked really good, so pretty much as good as you can ask for from the Astros. Number four, the Milwaukee Brewers. Sweep on the road against San Diego. San Diego, again, not very good. But to be able to take care of business against teams you're supposed to beat is important for the Brewers this year. Chase Anderson gave them the pitching performance that they needed. They had the big comeback in game two of that series. I think it was game two. And then, you know, hang some runs up on them in game three. So overall, really good weekend for the Brewers. Number three, the Boston Red Sox. Part of this is winning three of four against the Tampa Bay Rays. Part of it is that the New York only went 2-2 against Toronto. So it's always good to get a head start over your rival and get on top there. Really good to see David Price and what he did. And really when the only game that they lost was a Chris Sale start, and when he pitches as well as he does, you know, one bullpen blow up there, giving up six runs in the eighth. Not great, but overall really good for the Red Sox. Number two, the Angels. Taking the series from Oakland, getting off to a good start there. Mike Trout looks good. You got a home run from Albert Pujols. But the big thing here, I'm going to go with Shohei Ohtani. A, he got a hit to lead off his career. That's a good sign because I think some people, maybe myself included, didn't think he'd ever get one the way that he looked in spring. Bigger deal is how he pitched on Sunday in his debut. There were a lot of concerns from some about how he would handle it, and you know, with the spring and giving up so many hits and home runs and all this. So we'll get into Ohtani more in our last segment, but I thought that it was a really good week for the Angels because of what they got from him. And the number one week in baseball on top of the power rankings this week, the Washington Nationals. Not so much that it was a sweep of the Cincinnati Reds, because I think you expect that from the Nationals, but it's how they did it. They got outstanding pitching performances from Gio Gonzalez and Steven Strasburg and Max Scherzer. They get home runs from Bryce Harper, sure, but getting the performances that they did from Adam Eaton, seeing him bounce back the way that he has, I mean, that's huge for them, because he's somebody that they didn't have all last year after he tore his ACL early. So all good for Washington. They certainly, at least for three games, look like the best team in the National League. So let's look at somebody who's not managing the best team in the National League and look at Gabe Kapler. Probably the biggest story, or one of the biggest stories in baseball this weekend, was Kapler, the way that he handled his bullpen. You have game one taking out Aaron Nola, your ace, in the sixth inning at 68 pitches after giving up a double to Ender Inciarte. With a five-run lead, brings in a lefty to face Freddie Freeman. Two-run home run. Phillies end up losing that game. Then the big story is when he goes to the bullpen and nobody has actually warmed up. Then he has to delay, and it's just a mess. And the umpires let the pitcher warm up. Brian Snitker, Atlanta Braves manager, gets tossed because he disagrees that the pitcher got to warm up. I think overall, good decision by the umpire. You don't want to get somebody hurt. But MLB needs to, and according to Jason Sargon-Buster only, they are reprimanding or giving a warning to the Phillies, like, hey, dummies, don't screw up again. So we'll see if they're going to learn. But here's my thing with Kapler. I think he's an easy target and certainly doesn't have many friends in the media who are going to stick up for him. I feel like it's Brian Kenny and then me, I guess, are saying that maybe those three games don't mean that Gabe Kapler is the worst thing to ever happen to the Phillies or Major League Baseball. But he's got this personality. He's got these weird beliefs. He's Mr. Analytics. So, of course, 75% of the baseball media doesn't like him because they don't like analytics. But I don't know how, you know, let me preface this by saying I wouldn't have done what he did with Aaron Nola. But if you look at the numbers and how Freddie Freeman does against lefties versus righties, it was the third time through. When you look at how the left-hander that he brought in performs against lefties, I mean, even here, I think reading Andrew Knapp's quotes after the game saying, yeah, Nola gave up a double to Inciarte because he missed a spot really bad. He might have been slowing down a little bit. If that works, you know, we're not criticizing Kapler as much as we are. And so it's the result that we're criticizing more so than the process, or that's what we should be, because the process, by the numbers, wasn't the worst decision ever made. Again, I still wouldn't have made it. Freddie Freeman, you know, I think you have to stick with Nola there, especially at 68 pitches and in that five-run lead. But, I mean, I'm not going to kill the guy because of that. And then you even look at what he's really getting killed for is the bullpen mistake that he made in bringing in the reliever when he hadn't warmed up yet. We have to remember that this is only his third game, and it's not his fault that the Phillies hired him without that manager experience. So he's going to have bumps in the road, and he's going to have learning experiences. My question is, isn't there somebody in the dugout to tell him, hey, dude, we don't have anybody warm yet. He hasn't gotten up yet. I think somebody needs to tell him that and kind of have his back there. I mean, that's a team effort from the coaching staff. That's a team mistake, not just Gabe Kapler. I think, you know, one of my favorite stories from last year is Torrey Lovello, Arizona Diamondbacks manager. It's his first year. He tells me a story about Fernando Rodney and how he's warming up his bullpen, and he says, you know, okay, I have to be prepared if we tie the game. I have to be prepared if we're losing, so let's get these two guys up. Well, the Diamondbacks start getting some offense going, and all of a sudden, Torrey says, wait, now what do we do if we get the lead? Okay, we got to get Fernando up. So Torrey Lovello gets three relievers up in the bullpen, and it's a two-man pen, two mounds. Now, that wasn't caught on TV. It's not Philadelphia. It's not Gabe Kapler. So that story doesn't get blown up as much as it did, as maybe it would have in that market, but basically what I'm getting at is these kind of mistakes and rookie mistakes for managers happen. And I think that, you know, that's something that he'll probably learn from. You know, Matt Vasgersian mentioning on the ESPN broadcast of Sunday Night Baseball that the game moves really fast. And so for a guy that doesn't have that experience, you're going to make mistakes like that. You're going to do stuff like that, especially in your first three games. I'm not totally surprised. And again, this isn't his fault that he was hired with no experience. So we can't necessarily blame him and say, oh, you don't have experience. I can't believe you're making that mistake. And the other part is, I just think there's got to be somebody else on that staff that looks at that. So we'll see what he does from here. I think it's an important step for him now, leadership-wise, to see what he's going to do, how the players react to him, how he kind of makes up for this, because it was a bad weekend for him. But I don't think that this weekend and those decisions are going to dictate what Gabe Kapler is as a manager and what the Phillies are going to be this season. All right, final segment here. I want to touch on Shohei Ohtani, the Angels. We can get more on the Angels and Shohei Ohtani from Patrick Zajac, our host at Locked On Angels. And I got to tell you, what a sharp guy we've got over there, because Patrick is tweeting from the Angels account, and after the first inning, Ohtani strikes out two. Everybody's talking. He hits 100, throws nasty splitters, striking guys out. And then the Angels come to bat and score some runs, and Patrick points out on Locked On Angels that we'll see what he does, because he struggled in the spring when having those longer layoffs. And sure enough, come the second inning, single, three-run home run to Matt Chapman. And he gives up those three runs, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, great. You know, maybe that first inning was a fluke. Here we go again, kind of feeling if you're the Angels. But, give credit to Pat for being all over that. And just shows, I mean, I don't know where else you would find something like that. I mean, I certainly hadn't noticed it, but Pat's been paying attention, so good on him. But then after that, Ohtani cruised, and his stuff looked really good, and we all knew that he had good stuff. But the thing that stood out to me that shows me how dominant he was, is if you go back and look at some of the swings that the Angels were taking, or not the Angels, the Athletics were taking, specifically look at it like Chris Davis, and I know Chris Davis strikes out a ton, but he just had no chance up there. Like, whether it was a slider, whether it was a fastball, whether it was a pitch that never even started in the strike zone, getting him to check swing. I mean, Matt Olson, I think, had an ugly swing. I mean, just the ugly swings that Ohtani got shows just how good his stuff is. And so I think that was my biggest takeaway, that, yeah, he threw 100 and drop splitters and changeups, and I mean, just the movement that all of his pitches have. So he'll struggle and he'll give up some hits, and you know, he kind of hung it a little bit, but it still wasn't a terrible pitch to Chapman that he hit out. But yeah, I think when you are reading the swings, I think that's going to tell you what he's doing. I mean, some guys can put up good numbers, and underlying it shows that maybe got a little bit lucky. But when you look at the swing and miss totals for Ohtani, when you look at how ugly those swings were, and really it was just that second inning that the Athletics did anything, I think you come away really impressed with Ohtani. And so we'll see what he does as a hitter. But that's a really good offense that the Athletics have. I mean, that's a top 10 offense, I think, and they can put up runs in bunches. So good for Ohtani. We'll see what comes next. But I think he kind of, at least for one start, justified all the hype that came with him. And so, you know, one start doesn't make or break a season. I know that some wanted to say, oh, he was terrible all spring, so that's what I'm going to look at more so than this. But I think it shows more that spring is really irrelevant, because you're looking at, you know, who knows what he was working on at the time. You get him in this environment, and all of a sudden, he looks like that pitcher that he was advertised as. But go check out Locked On Angels this week. They'll have much more on Ohtani and what's ahead for the Angels as they look to compete with the Astros and for a wild card spot this year, if not with the Astros. So that'll do it for our Monday edition of Locked On MLB. We'll have episodes every day this week. Check us out at LockedOnMLB.com. You can find me writing there. You can find these podcasts there. We're also on iTunes. We are on Google Play. Hopefully we get to Stitcher, Spotify, and some of those other ones. But you can find us all at LockedOnMLB.com, and follow me on Twitter at StokeyTommy, STOKKE Tommy.